History in the making. Egypt sees its first civilian president elected through a freely contested poll. More than a year since they staged the revolution that sparked a chain reaction across the Arab world. Egyptians are taking their first step towards change. But what are the challenges? I'm Homa Lezgi and this is News Analysis.
Thousands and thousands of people converge on the home of the Egyptian revolution to know who the country's next president is.
فائز بمنصب رئيس جمهورية مصر العربية في الانتخابات التي جرت يومي 16 و 17 من يونيو هو السيد الدكتور محمد مرسي عيسى العياض.
And this is the reaction from a sea of Morsi's supporters at Liberation Square. Chants of Huria, Arabic for freedom.
Thanks to God, the revolution succeeded. The revolution will continue. We are not leaving here.
This is the result of efforts made by all Egyptians during and after the revolution, as well as during the election.
Egypt's election commission says Morsi won 51.73% of the votes in the June 16 and 17 election. And former Prime Minister Ahmed Shafir won 48.27%. Morsi is already receiving congratulatory messages from foreign countries, including Iran. What's next for Egypt? Morsi's election campaign has called for people to stay in the streets until the supplementary constitutional declaration is revoked. The declaration, drawn up by the junta, strips the president of most of his powers. As some people say, Egypt is on track toward democracy. Many others fear the constitutional powers the military has given itself will rob Egyptians of the benefits of electing their first president after the downfall of the former regime.
With us now live from London is Chris Bambury, political analyst. Welcome. I'd also like to welcome our guest in Washington, Mr. Bill Jones, with the Executive Intelligence Review. Thank you very much for being with us, gentlemen. My first question to Chris Bambury in London. Chris, do you think this is the start of a new struggle now with the military to restore the powers that the generals have now stripped from the presidency even before the victory was announced?
Yes, I do. I think Mohamed Morsi has no alternative but to support this agitation for an end to the supplementary constitution and to what is now six decades nearly of military rule in Egypt. The military have taken themselves on virtually every power they could get back by this measure and have hollowed out any power the president could have in reality. We have a president who's been elected, Mohamed Morsi, but there are no defined powers for that presidency. There is no parliament because that's been prorogued, and there is the body which is going to write the new constitution is being appointed by the ministers. If Morsi agrees to this, and the fact that the military have taken in effective control of foreign policy, defense policy, they retain control of the economy, then if he accedes to any of this, then he is a president with no power. He has no option, I believe, and I hope, but to continue this fight for real democracy in Egypt and an end to the military having, if you like, a say, a hidden hand or an open hand in the say about how Egypt is governed and indeed much of the economy. This has got to come to an end.
Bill Jones, now let's have your view on this. Is this inevitably then, in your view, about a power-sharing government, both Mohamed Morsi having some powers and the military council inevitably having some powers, what we're speaking about now being how much power each side is going to have rather than the military going back to its barracks?
Well, I think that's really going to be the situation as we go into the next few days. Of course, it was very exciting to see the results in the street. I think people generally breathed a sigh of relief that he was elected, that the election results were upheld. But all is not over yet. Now there's going to be, I don't think, I hope not, a conflict in the streets, but there will be a battle behind closed doors and negotiations between the new president and the military with regard to what the shape of the new Egypt will be like. I don't think that either side really has the power to pull through all of the demands that they might initially have. I think a lot of the measures that that were taken by the military will have to be walked back. But I think it's going to be a period where there's going to be a lot of discussions, a lot of perhaps heated discussions on what the shape of Egypt's going to look like, so that although we have breathed a sigh of relief in one sense, there's still a battle that's going to be conducted behind closed doors and to some extent on the streets and in the media.
Right. Well, we know right now that there have been negotiations between the Muslim Brotherhood as a party itself and Mohamed Morsi and the ruling generals. We were hearing at least parts of negotiations being about possible power sharing. Chris Bambury, you have said in earlier remarks that you think the Muslim Brotherhood did make mistakes maybe at the early stages of the revolution, and now is the time for it to win the trust of the public back. So basically, right now even, some experts are saying these results were used as a bargaining chip between the generals and the Brotherhood over the parameters of the new power-sharing government. So would you go as far as saying that there has been, this is being used as a bargaining chip, or would you say that the Muslim Brotherhood, even if it's engaged in these negotiations, it is going to be able to win back public trust?
No, I don't think it's guaranteed that it's going to win back public trust. I think the Muslim Brotherhood, after it won the presidential elections very convincingly, made a series of mistakes in essentially accepting that it would allow the military to retain the powers that it's traditionally had in Egyptian society. And it paid the price for that with the following support that we saw. Mohamed Morsi, I share a sigh of relief, he's won, but it's a narrow victory, and even taking into account some of the figures you might question, it's clear that his support fell and support for the Brotherhood fell. And that's the price they paid for making a compromise with the military and not pushing matters on when Mubarak fell, that it wasn't just simply a question of getting rid of Mubarak, but getting rid of the whole system, which has been in existence since 1952 in Egypt, of the military having this essential say over how Egypt is governed. And I think we're going to see two pressures coming in the Muslim Brotherhood. One is the pressure from the army. The other is the pressure from the West, which is, I was just reading the Financial Times, we were coming on air, and they're saying that, by and large, they welcome the Muslim Brotherhood, because I think, seriously, the Americans and the Europeans have agreed that this is probably the only alternative. But then they're saying that we want to see results on the economy, and by that they mean not addressing the poverty. 40% of the population earn $1 a day. They're not talking about that. They're talking about neoliberal economic reforms, and they're talking about retaining the deal with Israel. And so there'll be pressure from twofold, and Egypt needs IMF and European money in order to keep the economy going. So the Muslim Brotherhood is going to come under pressure from different directions, from the SCAF and the military on the one hand, but also from the Americans and the Europeans, demanding that it plays along to their agenda.
And then speaking about the stance of the Western powers, specifically the United States, Bill Jones, let's put this question to you. Right now, the reports that we're getting in the wires is a statement by the White House, and it says that it considers Mohamed Morsi's government as a pillar of regional peace. Rather, it says that it wants the Muslim Brotherhood candidate to be a pillar for regional peace. And it's also urged Mohamed Morsi to work towards advancing national unity when it comes to forming inclusive, they say, government. So, first of all, do you think that this was a surprise for the United States government and they would have preferred Ahmed Shafir to win? And how serious are their concerns, especially when it comes to Israel? Because we know the Muslim Brotherhood stands against Israel.
Well, look, basically, the United States government has been on uncharted grounds over the last few weeks with regard to the situation in Egypt. A lot of the discussions that had been ongoing, for instance, between the military and the Defense Secretary Panetta when he was there, were kind of reversed when the military made their decisions about the powers that they were going to maintain. And so the U.S. has not really been on top of this at all, and there's kind of a wait-and-see attitude trying to feel their way across as to, you know, what they are going to do as this situation proceeds. The statement from the press secretary today was essentially the initial statement. They did accept and greeted the election of Morsi. I don't think it was entirely a surprise. I think they were probably prepared for anything to happen there. But when it did happen, of course, they have to accept that the United States has been talking about democracy all over the place. And here, obviously, democratic elections were held. That's about all they could do. But at this point, they're really, again, on uncharted seas, and they're trying to feel their way forward to see, you know, what role they'll be able to play in this new situation in Egypt. They're calling for calm. I think the situation itself kind of pushes Morsi in that direction. He got a clear victory, but there were, according to the polls, 48% of the Egyptian public that are pretty nervous about what's going on, and he really has to establish himself as a representative for all the people. I think that's going to be obvious if problems are going to be avoided. But I think in one sense, the U.S. is playing a waiting game but trying to do something. They probably would have been, they would have preferred, of course, if one of the liberal groups who initiated the so-called Egyptian Revolution had played a more major role, but they were kind of pushed on the outside at a very early stage. So after that, it was pretty much out of the hands of anybody in the U.S. to do anything here.
Right. Back to London, Chris Bambury. It is widely believed in Egypt and among a lot of political observers that the United States has been with the military rulers and has been supporting the military rulers. Basically, that would imply that it would be supporting what the military council is doing right now in Egypt. If the United States is sincere about its stance on Egypt moving toward democracy, opponents say, is it going to, for instance, speak out against this soft coup, I'm putting in quotes, that has been, of course, alleged that the military council is following?
Well, I think you're right to use the remark soft coup. I think that's what it is. And I think the Americans, if they wanted to, could pull the plugs on the Egyptian military very quickly. The military are the second biggest benefactor of U.S. military aid. They couldn't really survive without it. But also, as I mentioned, the Egyptian economy is desperately in need of IMF and European Union cash. If that was not forthcoming, then they would be under pressure. We haven't seen that. And I think my colleague is right to say that the Americans have been, really since the beginning of the Arab Spring, have been caught off guard and have been reacting to events rather than trying to shape them. I think in the last few weeks, I think they've come to the assessment, essentially, that Morsi was going to win, and really the Muslim Brotherhood are probably the best bet in terms of stable government. But of course, that doesn't mean they're going to stop there. They will put pressure, as I said, on Morsi to play along with their Western agenda. And there's going to be a clash over that, over the question of Israel. People in Egypt are opposed to the treaty with Israel. That's not often said, but every opinion poll and every survey shows opposition to that. There is the expectations of people in Gaza, who we saw celebrating Morsi. And then there's the pressure from Washington and elsewhere saying that he should maintain the peace treaty. There is going to be expectation in Morsi that he should deliver for the people who are living in poverty, the vast majority of whom supported him. And there will be a lot of pressures. The Americans will be countering those pressures. And one of the ways of doing that is using the military to play, if you like, a strategy of tension. We've seen this in so many scenarios, that essentially the military help create a situation of seeming chaos. They create a situation of tension, and then portray themselves as being the only people who can provide security in Egyptian society. And I think we have to be aware that if Morsi doesn't play along with the military in the West, you could see an attempt to destabilize his government, his presidency, by the military and other forces. That's why I think it's of vital necessity that rather than trying to do deals with the military, who've reneged on those deals in the past, the Muslim Brotherhood and Morsi should be calling in those people who made the revolution to stay on the streets, the alliance that made that revolution to come together, and to push for real democracy in Egyptian society and not to stop halfway.
Back to Bill Jones here. I'd like to put this question to you as well, Mr. Jones, and that is Washington going to speak out when it comes to what role the military council is playing? Of course, the prediction is there's going to be confrontation, there's going to be some kind of clash, at least politically, between Mohamed Morsi and the military council. Today we were even hearing that why did the military council allow, or rather the constitutional court, who is made up of judges who are affiliated to the military council, they said that those political leaders who were part of the previous regime can still be in office. That, they said, is unconstitutional. The fact that the parliament was dissolved, they're saying that was an unconstitutional decision because it was freely elected. Now, when things are heating up now as Morsi is coming to power, is Washington going to still side with the military council?
Well, I don't think they can completely side with the military council, nor do I think they have tended to do in the most recent period. Like I said, they had the meeting, Secretary Panetta had a meeting with the military leaders, and I'm given to believe that he was told one thing, and when the military instituted these extraordinary measures, the U.S. also was kind of caught off guard by that. So it's not necessarily that this used to be the only game in town, of course. This is the way the situation was set up, that the U.S. relationship with the Egyptian and other militaries was really kind of the central focus of U.S. relations with that nation. That's no longer the case. Now there are other players in the game who are very important, and I think most people here in Washington would deem it folly to try and just play the side of the military in this case. I think there will be a tendency to try and find some kind of a solution of an agreement between President Morsi and the military on a lot of these issues without destabilizing the situation in Egypt. I'm hoping that will be the case, that reason will prevail in terms of that. But I don't think there's going to be any one-sided support of the military and all their actions, and the U.S. will put pressure on them not to do anything that would really destabilize the whole situation, which would be a disaster for everybody.
Yeah, well, today, besides seeing the celebrations taking place among Egyptians in Liberation Square, Chris Bambury, we were seeing Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, very jubilant indeed, very joyous indeed. They were saying that for them this is very important because they believe this is going to bring change for the Palestinians in the struggle against Israel. Mark Regev, the Netanyahu spokesman, so far he's said that we're not going to say anything about our stance on the situation in Egypt. At the same time, senior Hamas official Mr. Mahmoud Zahar has said this is a historic moment, a new era in the history of Egypt, a defeat for the program of normalization, he said, and security cooperation with the enemy. So high hopes expressed there by Hamas. Do you think that these are going to be realized?
Well, there's an old saying that the road to Jerusalem lies through Cairo. In other words, Egypt is the key to the whole situation in the Arab world. It's the largest country, most important. And the Palestinians will be looking to Egypt for support. We should also recall that under Mubarak and previously under Sadat, that the other side of the boundary between of the Gaza Strip was policed by the Egyptians, who played along with the Israelis. We shouldn't forget that. So the siege of Gaza was policed as well by the junior part of the Egyptians here. This has to come to an end. It's going to come to an end. And I can't see there's any way back to the Egyptians shutting the border with Gaza. That's got to be opened. There's racketing tension between Hamas and people in the Gaza Strip and Israel at the moment. There's a wider picture as well. There's going to be big expectations of change. And there'll be sympathy, and there is support for the Palestinians inside Egypt. The Muslim Brotherhood are going to face pressure, as I said, from America and elsewhere to maintain the treaty with Israel. Israel now has very important economic investments in Egypt as well, so that's another form of pressure. Their supporters will expect them to make that break and support the Palestinian resistance. Now, again, one hopes that the Muslim Brotherhood and President Morsi will go that way and not go the other way.
Right. I'm just being told Mr. Walid al-Haddad with the Freedom and Justice Party is now joining us live from Cairo to share his thoughts with us. Mr. Haddad, thanks so much for being with us. The question I'd like to put to you first is, can Mohamed Morsi now challenge the military rulers when it comes to the sweeping powers that they already have?
Yeah, thank you very much. I'd like to send my greetings for all Egyptian people and all the people around the world, that now Egypt is a civilian country, civilian state. Now it's the first president after the revolution, the post-revolution president for Egypt, Dr. Mohamed Morsi. Now he is with the people in the street. He is the people for the street also. He is the people for all Egyptians, not for Freedom and Justice Party's member or Muslim Brotherhood. He is now a president for all Egyptians. He will have the power from the people. He is preparing himself to satisfy people's need through his position as a president for all Egyptians. I think there will be a great participation from different political parts and forces in Egypt to support him in his second step after the declaration from the Presidential Election Committee that he is the president. The second step will be with SCAF in order to have his authority and right. Try to attract his power again, because now we are in a very critical situation.
Now, Mr. Haddad, if I could just stop you there, if I may.
Power is still in SCAF's hands, so we...
Yeah, Mr. Haddad, the question is, we are hearing of negotiations already taking place between the Muslim Brotherhood and SCAF. Can you confirm for us what these negotiations have been about? Are we going to see then a power-sharing government with most of the power in the hands of the military and restricted power for the president?
Could you please repeat the question? Yes,
of course.
There is some disturbance in your,
yes, of course. Right? Are there talks between the Muslim Brotherhood and SCAF over a power-sharing government with the military having most of the powers?
Yeah, well, I'd like to say that there is no problem between SCAF and Muslim Brotherhood. Now, the race is between SCAF and Egyptian people. There is no direct contact between Muslim Brotherhood and SCAF. Now, the direct contact will be from the president to SCAF. The president have now the power from the street, and SCAF must leave the power to the president and return to their position. When we are talking about Muslim Brotherhood, the relation now between Dr. Mohamed Morsi, Egyptian president, and Muslim Brotherhood has been ended. Dr. Badia, the Supreme Guide for Muslim Brotherhood, announced 2 hours earlier that there is no relation from now between Dr. Mohamed Morsi and Muslim Brotherhood. So, when we are talking about a very a strong movement in the street like Muslim Brotherhood, we are talking about another political forces and actors in the political scene in Egypt.
Okay, I'm afraid we've run out of time. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Walid al-Haddad, with the Freedom and Justice Party, joining us there live from Cairo. I'd also like to thank Chris Bambury, political analyst in London. Thank you very much. And a big thank you to Bill Jones with the Executive Intelligence Review, joining us live from Washington. I'm afraid we have run out of time for this edition of News Analysis from me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team. Until our next programme, goodbye.